Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Rhaera Revelations, Book 3, Nephron Rising, Part 2 of 2, by Michael J. Sullivan, narrated by Bradley Smith. Performed by Chris Gennebach, Laura C. Harris, Jonathan Foyer, Nusha Nawab, Dwayne Washington, Terrence Aselford, Kimberly Gilbert, Bradley Smith, Jeff Allen, Andy Brownstein, Marnie Penning, Henry Kramer, Nick DePinto, Scott McCormick, Christopher Graybill, Nora Ashrati, Mort Shelby, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Dylan Lynch, Yasmin Twazan, Drew Kopas, Elliot Dash, Chris Davenport, Jonathan Church, Jonathan David Martin, Lawrence Redmond, Richard Rowan, Sasha Olenek, Andy Clements, Ken Jackson, Patrick Bussink, Jefferson A. Russell, Nanette Savard, Matthew Pauly, Matthew Bassett, Chris Stinson, James Lewis, Jacob Yeh, Colleen Delaney, Carolyn Kashner, Michael John Casey, Jonathan Watkins, Kenyatta Rogers, Ren Casey, Scott Bruffy, Faith Potts, and Frank Britton. Nephron Rising, Part 2.
The manor house's jail was less a dungeon and more an old well. Forced to descend by a rope, Hadrian was trapped at the bottom. He waited in silence, looking up at the stars. The rising moon cast a shaft of pale light that descended the wall, marking the slow passage of the night. Cold spring water seeped in through the walls, leaving them damp and creating a shallow pool at the base. With his feet tiring, Hadrian eventually sat in the cold puddle. Jagged rocks hidden under the water added to his misery. The moonlight was more than halfway down the wall when Hadrian heard movement from above.
Open it up!
Dark silhouettes appeared, and the iron grate scraped as it slid clear. A rope lowered, and Hadrian thought they had reconsidered. He stood up to take hold of it, but stopped when he saw another figure coming down.
In you go. We keep all our rats down there.
The figure was nimble and descended quickly.
Royce, they captured you?
The rope was pulled up and the grate slid back in place.
More or less.
Royce glanced around.
Not much on accommodations, are they?
I can't believe they caught you.
It wasn't as easy as you'd think. They aren't very bright.
Hadrian shook his head.
So you let them capture you?
Ingenious, don't you think?
Oh, brilliant.
Figured it was the easiest way to find you.
Royce shuffled his feet in the water, grimacing.
So what's your excuse? Did they come for you with an army of 20 heavily armored men?
They caught me sleeping.
Royce shot him a skeptical look.
Let's just say I was put in a position where I'd have to kill people, and I chose not to. This is my home, remember? I don't want to be known as a killer here.
So it is good I didn't slit throats. I'm smarter than I thought.
Oh, yes. I can see the genius in your plan.
Hadrian looked up.
How do you suggest we get out now?
Eventually, Lurit will haul us out and hand us over to a press gang, just as he threatened. We'll serve in the Imperial Army for a few days, learn what we can, and then slip away. We can report what we discover to Ulrich for an added bonus.
What about Arista?
She's safely on her way to the rendezvous with Gaunt. Etcher arrived just before dark, and I sent her with him. She'll likely stay with Gaunt, sending dispatches back to Melengar via messengers until Ulrich's forces join with the Nationalists.
And if Gaunt turns her down?
It's in Gaunt's best interest to see her to safety. It's not like he's going to turn her over to the Empire. She'll probably end up returning to Melengar by sea. Actually, it's better we aren't with her. If Merrick is out there, I'm sure he'll be more interested in me than her. So that job is complete.
I guess there is that to be thankful for, at least. What?
I'm just thinking about Merrick. He'll have no idea where I am now. My disappearance will drive him crazy.
Hadrian sat down.
Isn't that water cold?
Yup. And the bottom has sharp rocks, coated in a disgusting slime.
Royce looked up at the opening once more, then gritted his teeth and slowly eased himself down across from Hadrian.
Oh yeah, real comfortable.
They sat in silence for a few minutes, listening to the breeze flutter across the grating.
You realize that with this job over, I'm officially retired.
Yeah, I assumed as much.
Royce fished beneath him, withdrew a rock, and tossed it aside.
I was thinking of returning here. Maybe Grimbald could use a hand, or Armagil, which is getting older now, and probably would welcome a partner. Those barrels can be heavy, and brewing beer has its perks.
Moonlight revealed Royce's face. He looked tense.
I know you're not happy with this, but I really need a change. I'm not saying I'll stay here. I probably won't, but it's a start. I consider it practice for a peaceful life.
And that's what you want? A peaceful life? No more dreams of glory?
That's all they were, Royce. Just dreams. It's time I faced that, and I got on with my life.
I've something to tell you. I should have told you a long time ago, but I guess I was afraid you'd do something foolish. No, that's not true either. It's just taken me a while to see that you have the right to know.
Know what?
Royce looked around him.
I never thought I'd be telling you in a place like this, but I must admit it could be a benefit that they took your weapons.
He pulled out Danbury's letter.
How do you have that?
From Arista.
Why didn't they take it when they grabbed you?
Are you kidding? I practically had to remind them to take my dagger. They don't seem too accustomed to thieves, much less ones that turn themselves in.
Royce handed the note to Hadrian.
What did you think of when you read this?
That my father died filled with pain and regret. He believed the words of a selfish 15-year-old that he was a coward and wasted his life. It's bad enough that I left him, but I had to paint that stain on him before leaving.
Hadrian, I don't think this letter had anything to do with your leaving. I think it's due to your heritage. I think your father was trying to tell you something about your past.
How would you know? You never met my father. You're not making any sense.
Last year, in Arvinpartha, Ezra Harden was using a spell to find the heir.
I remember, you told me that before.
But I didn't tell you everything. The spell didn't find the heir exactly, but rather magical amulets worn by him and his guardian. Ezra Harden made the necklaces so he could locate the wearers and prevent other wizards from finding them. As I told you, I didn't recognize the face of the heir. He was some guy with blonde hair and blue eyes I'd never seen before.
And this is important. Why?
I didn't know, at least not for certain, not really. I always thought Ezra was using us. That's mainly why I never told you. I wanted to be sure it was true, and that's why I asked you to come, and why I led us here. Tell me, where did you get that necklace? The amulet you wear under your shirt?
I told you, my father.
Hadrian paused, staring at Royce, his hand unconsciously rising to his neck to feel the necklace.
I didn't recognize the heir, but I did recognize the guardian. Your father had a secret, Hadrian. A big secret.
Hadrian continued to stare at Royce. His mind flashed back to his youth, to his gray-haired father, spending day after day toiling humbly on the anvil and forge, making harrows and plowshares.
No, my father was a blacksmith.
How many blacksmiths teach their sons ancient Teshlor combat skills, most of which have been lost for centuries? Where did you get that big Spadone sword you've carried on your back since I first met you? Was that your father's too?
Hadrian slowly nodded and felt a chill raise the hairs on his arms. He had never told Royce about that. He had never told anyone. He had taken the sword the night he had left. He had needed his own blade. Da often had several weapons in his shop, but taking them would have cost his father money. Instead, he had taken the only weapon he felt his father would not miss. Da had kept the Spadone hidden in a small compartment under the shop's fifth floorboard. Danbury had taken it out only once, a long time ago, when Hadrian's mother had still been alive. At the time, Hadrian was very young, and now the memory was hard to recall. His mother was asleep, and Hadrian should have been as well, but something had woken him. Crawling out of bed, He had found his father in the shop. Daw had been drinking Armagil's ale and was sitting on the floor in the glow of the forge. In his hands, he cradled the huge, two-handed sword, talking to it as if it were a person. He was crying. In 15 years of living with the man, Hadrian had seen him cry only that one time.
I want you to do me a favor. Read this again, only this time pretend you hadn't run away. Read it as if you and your father were on great terms and he was proud of you.
Hadrian held the parchment up to the moonlight and read it again.
Hadi, I hope this letter will find you. It's important that you know there is a reason why you should never use your training for money or fame. I should have told you the truth, but my pain was too great. I can admit to you now, I'm ashamed of my life, ashamed of what I failed to do. I suppose you were right. I'm a coward. I let everyone down. I hope you can forgive me, but I can never forgive myself. Love, Da. Before you were born, the year 92, lost what was precious and that what was new. The blink of an eye, the beat of a heart. Out went the candle, and guilt was my part. A king and his knight went hunting a boar. A rat and his friends were hunting for lore. Together they fought, till one was alive. The knight sadly wept, no king had survived. The answers to riddles, to secrets, and more are found in the middle of legends and lore. Seek out the answer and learn, if you can, the face of regret, the life of a man.
You realize a spadone is a knight's weapon?
Hadrian nodded.
And yours is a very old sword, isn't it?
Hadrian nodded again.
I would venture to guess it's about 900 years old. I think you're the descendant of Jerish, the guardian of the air.
Hadrian stared at Royce. He did not know how to feel about this. Part of him was excited, thrilled, vindicated, and part of him was certain Royce was insane.
And you kept this from me?
I didn't want to tell you until I knew for sure. I thought Ezra Harden might be playing us.
Don't you think I would have thought of that too? What do you take me for? Have you worked with me for 12 years because you think I'm stupid? How conceited can you be? You can't trust me to make my own decisions, so you make them for me?
I'm telling you now, aren't I?
It took you a whole damn year, Royce! Didn't you think I'd find this important? When I told you I was miserable because I felt like my life lacked purpose, that I wanted a cause worth fighting for, you didn't think that protecting the heir qualified?
Hadrian shook his head in disbelief.
You stuck up! Manipulative, lying!
I never lied to you.
No, you just concealed the truth, which to me is a lie, but in your twisted little mind is a virtue.
I knew you were gonna take it this way.
How else would you expect me to take it? Gee, pal, thanks for thinking so little of me that you couldn't tell me the truth about my own life.
That's not the reason I didn't tell you.
You just said it was!
I know I did.
So you're lying to me again?
Call me a liar one more time.
And what?
What? You going to fight me?
It's dark in here.
But there's no room for you to hide. You're only a threat until I get my hands on you. I just need to grab your spindly little neck. For all your quickness, once I get a grip on you, it's all over.
Without warning, cold water poured down on them. Looking up, Hadrian saw silhouetted figures.
You boys be quiet down there. His Excellency wants a word with you.
One head disappeared from view, and another replaced it at the opening's edge.
I'm Lurit, the Imperial Envoy of Her Eminence, the Grand Imperial Empress Modena Novronian. The two of you are hereby charged with espionage, and hitherto will be put to death by hanging in 3 days' time. Should, however, you wish to attempt to rescind that sentence to life in prison, I'd be willing to do so under the condition that you revealed to me the whereabouts of Princess Arista Ezendun of Melengar.
Neither said a word.
Tell me where she is, or you'll be hanged as soon as the village carpenter can build a proper gallows.
Again, they were silent.
Very well. Perhaps a day or two rotting in there will change your mind.
Lurette turned away.
No food or water. It might help to loosen their tongues. Besides, there's really no sense in wasting it.
They waited in silence as the figures above moved away.
How does he know?
A ghastly look stole over Royce's face.
What is it? Etcher. He's the mole in the diamond.
Royce kicked the wall.
How could I have been so blind? He was the one who lit the lamp on the river, alerting the wherry behind us. The only reason he never thought to check the mill's sails was because it didn't matter to him. I bet he never even told Price where we were, so there would be no way for the diamond to find us. There must be an ambush waiting at Amberton Lee, or somewhere along the way.
But why take her there? Why not just turn Arista over to Lurette?
I'd wager this is Merrick's game. He doesn't want some Imperial clown like Lurette getting the prize. She's a commodity which can be sold to the Empire or ransomed to Melengar for a profit. If Lurette grabs her, Merrick gets nothing.
So why tell Lurette about us at all?
Insurance? With the Manor officials after us, we'd be pressed for time and wouldn't question Etcher's story. I'm sure it was to hasten our departure and have us unprepared, but it turned out even better. Because you were captured and I decided to stay behind to help you.
And you sent Arista off alone with Etcher?
She's on her way to Merrick or Guy or both. Maybe they'll keep her and demand Ulric surrender Medford. He won't, of course. Pickering won't let him.
I can't believe Ulric sent her in the first place. What an idiot! Why didn't he pick a representative outside the royal court? Why did he have to send her?
He didn't send her. I doubt anyone in Medford has a clue where she is. She did this on her own.
What?
She arrived at the Rose and Thorn unescorted. Have you ever seen her go anywhere without a bodyguard?
So why did you...
Because I needed an excuse to bring you here, to find out if what Ezra Harden showed me was true.
Oh, so this is my fault?
No, it's everyone's fault. You for pushing so hard to retire, me for not telling you the truth, Arista for being reckless, even your father for never having told you who you really are.
They sat in silence a moment.
So what do we do now? Your original plan isn't going to work so well anymore.
Why do I always have to come up with the plans, Mr. I'm not so stupid?
Because when it comes to deciding how I should live my own life, I should be the one to choose. But I'm getting out of a prison, even as pathetic as it is. That's more your area of expertise.
Royce began to look around at the walls.
By the way, what was the real reason you didn't tell me?
Huh?
A bit ago, you said...
Royce continued to study the walls. He seemed a little too preoccupied by them.
I didn't want you to leave.
Hadrian almost laughed at the comment, thinking it was a joke, and then nearly bit his tongue. Thinking of Royce as anything but callous was difficult. Then he realized Royce never had a family and precious few friends. He had grown up an orphan on the streets of Ratibor, stealing his food and clothes, and likely receiving his share of beatings for it. He had probably joined the Diamond as much from a desire to belong as a means to profit. After only a few short years, they had betrayed him. Hadrian realized at that moment that Royce did not see him as just his partner, but his family. Along with Gwen and perhaps Arcadius, Hadrian was the only one he had.
You ready?
For what?
Turn around. Let's go back to back and link arms.
You're kidding. We aren't gonna do that again, are we? I've been sitting in cold water for hours. I'll cramp.
You know another way to get up there?
Hadrian shook his head. Royce looked up.
It isn't even as high as the last time, and it's narrower, so it'll be easier. Stand up and stretch a second. You'll be fine.
What if the guard is up there with a stick to poke us with?
Do you want to get out of here or not?
Hadrian turned and linked arms back to back with Royce.
I'm still mad at you.
Yeah, well, I'm not too happy with me either right now.
They began pushing against each other as they walked up the walls of the pit. Immediately, Hadrian's legs began to protest the effort, but the strain on his legs was taken up some by the tight linking of their arms and the stiff leverage it provided.
Push harder against me.
I don't want to crush you.
I'm fine. Just lean back more.
Initially, the movement was clumsy and the exertion immense, but soon they fell into a rhythm. The water running down the walls gave birth to a slippery slime, and Hadrian carefully placed his feet on the drier bricks and used the cracks for traction. Royce was infinitely better at this sort of thing, and likely impatient with their progress. Hadrian was far less comfortable and often pushed too hard. His legs were longer and stronger, and he had to keep remembering to relax. They finally rose above the level of slime to where the rock was dry, and they moved with more confidence. Hadrian started to perspire with the effort, and his skin was slicked with sweat. A droplet cascaded down his face and hung dangling on the tip of his nose. Above, he could see the grate growing larger, but it was still a maddening distance away. They were now high enough that a fall would break bones. Hadrian had to push the thought out of his mind and concentrate. Nothing good would come from anticipating failure. Instead, he forced himself to think of Arista riding to her death or capture. They had to make it up, and quickly, before his legs lost all their strength. Already they shook from fatigue, buckling under the strain. Hadrian kept his eyes on the wall where he placed his feet, but felt Royce tilting his head back, peering up.
Stop.
They steadied themselves, unlinked arms, and grabbed the grating. Letting their tortured legs fall loose, they hung for a minute. The release of the strain was wonderful, and Hadrian closed his eyes with pleasure as he gently swayed.
Good news and bad news. No guards, but it's locked.
You can do something about that, right?
Just give me a second.
He could feel Royce shifting around behind him.
Got it.
Hadrian's fingers were starting to hurt.
Okay, we'll slide it to your left. Ready? Feet up.
The grate was lighter than Hadrian had expected, and it easily slid clear. They hauled themselves out, rolling on the damp grass of the manor's lawn, and lay for a second, catching their breath. They were alone in a darkened corner of the manor's courtyard.
Weapons?
I'll check the house. You see about getting horses.
Don't kill anyone.
I'll try not to, but if I see Lurit...
Yeah, kill him.
Hadrian worked his way carefully toward the courtyard stable. The horses started at his approach. He grabbed the first saddle and bridle he found and discovered they were familiar. Arista's bay mare, his horse, and Mouse were corralled with the rest.
Easy girl.
He threw the blankets on two of them. He buckled the last bridle around Mouse's neck when Royce came in carrying a bundle of swords.
Your weapons, Sir Knight.
Lurit.
Hadrian strapped his swords on.
Didn't see him. Didn't see hardly anyone. These country folk go to bed early.
We're a simple lot.
Mouse? I just can't seem to get rid of this horse, can I?
Arista discovered riding on the back of a horse was significantly less comfortable than riding in a saddle. Etcher added to her misery by keeping the horse at a trot. The hammering to Arista's body caused her head to ache.
Can we slow down?
Etcher ignored her. Before long, the animal slowed to a walk on its own. It frothed, and Arista could feel its sweat soaking her gown. Etcher kicked the beast until it started again. When the horse once more returned to a walk, Etcher resorted to whipping it with the ends of the reins. He missed and struck Arista hard across the thigh.
Ow!
That was also ignored. Eventually, Etcher gave up and let the horse rest.
Where are we going? And why do we need to rush?
Still, he said nothing. He never even turned his head. After a mile or two, he drove the animal into a trot once more. He acted as if she were not there. When it came to silence, Etcher put Royce to shame. He said nothing at all. The profession of thievery was not likely to attract gregarious types, but Etcher seemed an extreme case. He even refused to look at her. This was perhaps better than some alternatives. A man such as Etcher was likely acquainted only with sun-baked, easy women in dirty dresses. How appealing must it be to have a young noblewoman clutching to him alone in the wilderness, and a royal princess at that?
Why must I always focus on the negative? The man has done nothing at all. So he's quiet, so what? He's risking his own life smuggling me to this meeting. He's nervous, watchful. Perhaps he's frightened too. Is it so odd he's not making small talk? I'm just scared, that's all. Everything looks bad when you're scared.
The trail disappeared entirely, and they rode across unmarked fields of wind-swept grass. They seemed to be heading toward a vague and distant hill. She spotted some structures silhouetted against the pallid sky. They entered yet another forest, this time through a narrow opening in the dense foliage, where Etcher was content to let the horse walk. Away from the wind, it was quiet. Fireflies blinked around them, and Arista listened to the clacking steps of their mount.
We're on a road?
Although it was too dark to see anything clearly, Arista recognized the sound of hooves on cobblestone.
Where are we?
When at last they cleared the trees, she could see up the slope of a bald hill where the remains of buildings sat. Giant stones spilled and scattered to the embrace of grass, forming dark, heaped ruins of arched doorways and pylons of rock. Like grave markers, they thrust skyward at neglected angles, the lingering cadavers and bleached bones of forgotten memories.
What is this place?
She spotted the glow of fire up the slope. Without a word, Etcher kicked the horse once more into a trot. Arista took solace in knowing the end of her ordeal was at hand. Near the top, two men sat huddled amidst the ruins. A campfire flickered, sheltered from the wind by a corner section of weathered stone and rubble. One man was hooded, the other hatless, and immediately Arista thought of Royce and Hadrian.
Did they somehow arrive ahead of us?
As they drew closer, Arista realized she was wrong. These men were younger, and both as large as, if not larger than, Hadrian. They stood at the horse's approach, and Arista saw dark shirts, leather tunics, and broadswords hanging from thick belts.
Running late!
The hooded one grabbed the reins.
Thought you weren't going to make it.
Are you nationalists?
The man hesitated. The other one nodded.
Of course.
The hooded one helped her down from the horse. His hands were large and powerful. He had 2 days of beard and smelled of sour milk.
Is one of you Deegan Gaunt?
No, he sent us ahead to see if you were who you said you were. Are you Princess Arista Essendon of Melengar?
She looked from one face to the next, all harsh expressions. Even Etcher glared at her.
Well, are you or aren't you?
Of course she is.
Etcher gripped his reins.
I have a long ride back, so I want my payment. And don't try to cheat me.
Payment?
Etcher once more ignored her.
I don't think we can pay you for delivery until we know it's her. And we certainly aren't taking your word for it. She could be a whore from the swill yards of Colnora that you washed and dressed up. And did a piss poor job of it at that.
She's pretending to be a commoner. And she's dirty on account of the ride here.
The hooded man advanced closer to study her. She backed up instinctively, but not fast enough, as he grabbed her roughly at the chin and twisted her face from side to side. Infuriated, she kicked at him and managed to strike his shin. Anger flashed in his eyes.
Oh, you bloody little bitch!
She found herself on her hands and knees, gripping a spinning world with fists full of grass. Her face ached and her eyes watered.
How dare you strike me?
Etcher pointed at her.
See?
The hooded man nodded.
All right, we'll pay you. Danny, give him 20 gold.
20? The sentinel agreed to 50.
Keep your mouth shut or it'll be 10.
Arista panted on the ground, her breath coming in short, stifled gasps. She was scared and rapidly losing herself to panic. She needed to calm down, to think. Through bleary eyes, she looked at Etcher and his horse. There was no chance of grabbing the animal and riding away. Etcher's feet were in the stirrups, and her weight could never pull him off.
Guy won't appreciate you pocketing 30 of the gold he sent with you.
Who do you really think he'll believe? You or us?
Arista considered the fire. She could try to run to it and grab a stick. She concluded she would never make the distance. Even if she did, a stick would be useless against swords.
Take the 20 and keep your damn mouth shut, or you can ride away with nothing.
She thought about running. She'd have to make it all the way to the forest before having the slightest hope of getting away, and Etcher could ride after her and drag her back. Afterward, they would beat her and tie her, and then all hope would be lost. Etcher spat in anger.
Give me the 20.
The hooded man tossed a pouch and Etcher caught it with a bitter look. Arista started to cry. Time was running out. She was helpless, and there was nothing at all she could do. For all her royal rank, she could not defend herself, nor was her education in the art of magic any help. All she could do was make them sneeze, and that was not going to save her this time.
Yeah!
Not surprisingly, Etcher left without a word to her.
So this is what a princess looks like. There's nothing special about you, is there? You look just as dirty as any wench I've had.
Oh, I don't know. She's better than I've seen. Throw me the rope over there. I want to enjoy myself, not get scratched up.
She felt her blood go cold. Her body trembled. Tears streamed down her cheeks as she watched the man set off to fetch the rope. No man had ever touched her before. No one dared to think in such terms. Doing so would mean death in Melengar. She had no midnight rendezvous, no casual affairs or castle romances. No boy had ever chanced so much as a kiss, but now... She watched as the man with the stubble beard came at her with a length of twine. If only she'd learned something more useful than tickling noses and boiling water, she could... Arista stopped crying. She did not realize it, but she had stopped breathing as well. Could it work? There was nothing else to try. The man grinned expectantly as Arista closed her eyes.
Oh, look at that. I think she likes the idea. She's serenading us.
Maybe it's a noble ritual or something.
Arista barely heard them. Once more, using the concentration method Ezra Hodden had taught her, she focused her mind. She could feel the stars and sense the earth below. There was power there. She pulled it toward her, breathing it in, sucking it into her body, drawing it to her mind.
How do you want her?
Wrist behind the back works for me. Maybe we should ask her how she likes it. Never know what might tickle a royal's fancy.
She was forming the words, drawing in the power, giving it form. She focused elements, giving them purpose and direction. She built the incantation as she had before, but now varied it. She pushed, altering the tone to shift the focus just enough. Arista felt herself pulled to her feet as the man spun her and maneuvered her arms behind her back. She ignored him, concentrating instead on moving her fingers as if she were playing an invisible musical instrument. She felt the rough, scratchy rope touch her wrists.